This is a collection of recordings I made with some of the world's most knowledgeable, well-known, and successful whitetail hunters on the planet. I know you're really going to enjoy and learn from the wisdom they share, along with their personal life and their walk with God. I hope you enjoy these classic conversations. Boy, I have got a real treat for you today. I have got not only one of the top whitetail biologists in the country, but a close friend of mine who I have spent a lot of time around the world with, and I think you're going to love getting to know this guy, and he's going to have a lot of information you are going to benefit from. I've got on the phone Wade Nolan. Wade, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Buddy, you have got more stories than at least 100 guys that I know in your life. Your bio starts off, it says that Wade Nolan has lived a life of high adventure, and I think that's really an understatement. Where haven't you been?
Haven't been to Australia yet, but it's on the list.
Yeah, we got to get that one down. You've traveled. You just came back. I know you just came back a couple of days ago, and you were in, was it South Africa?
Yeah, it was actually in South Africa, Brent, Botswana, and Namibia. I've been going to Africa for about 16 years. I go at least once a year, try to go for a month at a time. Sometimes I go for longer, but I really have a lot of fun over there. I actually run an adventure safari, which has no hunting involved. That's where we do things like capture Cape Buffalo with wildlife vets and use helicopters and dart guns. I've just captured, just in the last, a week ago, Brent, I was working with wildlife vets over there. And I take people over to do this with me, but I was over there doing... we did 40 wildebeest. We captured a giraffe of all things, and putting a giraffe in a truck's kind of a three alarm fire, I'll tell you. We captured a Cape buffalo and a bunch of sable, and I was up in the chopper, and it was just some wild and crazy stuff. I think we saw 15 lions and six leopards in Kruger, one of which was dragging away a impala by the throat when I got there. I got some good footage, but pretty neat stuff.
Now, I know that you travel some other places because I've had the chance to go with you, and you go to another state quite a bit. What state is that?
Yeah, it's Alaska.
Yeah. You spent, 17 years there living?
Yeah, we spent 17 years in Alaska, 5 years of that north of the Arctic Circle, and I'm pretty well vested in Alaska. It's one of my favorite places in the world. I go back every year. As a matter of fact, we're doing a missions retreat up there this next summer, but you and I, and so that'll really be special. But yeah, I've got a boat up there, and we go out chasing around in Prince William Sound with killer whales and big brown bears, and catching halibut and salmon and calving glaciers, all the good stuff.
Get shipwrecked every now and then.
Yeah, every once in a while you get a shipwreck. You got to have a little adventure.
Yeah, we'll save that story for another time. You know, one of the neat things on your bio is that you were mentored by an Athabascan Indian missionary, and his name was Fred Mambeloff. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, boy, I was really fortunate. I got to become best friends with this Athabascan Indian who had been all over the state of Alaska. Fully Indian, fully white guy. I mean, this guy plays both sides. He's just really crafted to be in the wilderness. And he and I spent untold days and months out there in Eskimo and Indian villages, floated 600 miles of the Yukon with him, climbed mountains, shot a bunch of moose, spent tons of time on Kodiak Island with him. But just a quality guy. He's my mentor into Christianity, actually. I saw Christ through him.
Now, I know that you know a lot about people and relationships, because you and I work together. We talk a lot about some of these things. But in this guy with Fred, how much did he teach you about the outdoors? I mean, I know you were already vested in a lot of that stuff, but as far as your hunting and things that you're doing kind of now, did he have a big investment in that part?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was originally a biologist from Pennsylvania, moved up there, and so everything was new. And Fred Mambeloff was just an excellent person to hang around with. I mean, this guy trapped by dog sled when he was a kid, guided brown bears on Kodiak Island, was special forces in World War II, you know, climb mountains. This guy was just like out of a storybook, but just a solid guy. I learned a lot about a lot of things from him, especially moose. He was really grounded in moose. He shot over 100 moose, and
wow.
And so did a lot of moose hunting with him and calling and just getting out into places that people don't normally go. But what a quality guy, and really impacted my life.
You know, looking at your biography here, I mean, you floated down over 600 miles of the Yukon River. You know, you were documenting Athabascan Indian culture. It says here nights you would spend in a year over 100 nights, you know, pitched in a tent and in front of a campfire. You had a company up there called Alaska Wilderness Perspective, but when you came back, was it 1993?
Yeah, it was actually in 92.
And you formed a company called Whitetail University.
Yep.
Now you sold.
Yeah, I've always had a passion for whitetails, Brent, and so I've always been kind of well studied on whitetails. I work with the professional organization called the Deer Meeting, which is about 400 whitetail biologists who get together yearly and do they share their research on whitetail deer, which is the most researched animal in the world. And I attend those meetings all the time, and I know those guys, and I've even given papers on whitetail research at those meetings. But you learn a lot. And what I like to do is take what I've learned from those scientific meetings and then I call it bubba-size it, you know, bring it down to where
right.
regular guys can understand what's going on and what the research revealed and how we can take that research and apply it to our hunting and make us more effective.
Well, I'm hoping you can bubba-size us today, because I know I've learned a lot from you, and I think other guys will. You've conducted probably now well over 300 whitetail hunting seminars. Your video clips, the streaming video, like on bowhunting.net or BowTube or different places, how many views are they getting a year?
You know, a grand total in the last 36 months is we're approaching 20 million views.
Wow.
Which makes my clips the most viewed video clips in the world in the whitetail industry.
Wow.
And what I do, Brent, is, man, there's a lot of guys out there, and I hope I don't offend anyone, but a lot of the TV shows or a lot of the guys I see sharing whitetail information, it could be subtitled, "Look at me, ain't I great?" And I get kind of fed up with that. And my goal is to do something a little different, and that is to spend my time helping to make other people more effective in the whitetail woods. It's not about me, it's about them, you know? And so I really enjoy doing seminars when I can get in there and kind of walk people through some new and exciting information. A lot of times guys are out there hunting whitetails and they're stumbling around when there's tons of information they can access and apply to their hunt to make them more effective. And I like to, you know, be part of that sharing, bringing that whitetail science into the hands of those whitetail hunters we hang around with.
Well, let's do that now. I mean, let's go ahead and get started. I know that you speak all over the country teaching whitetail seminars. Guys flock to hear you speak. I know I did years ago when you and I first met back in the early 80s up in Alaska, and you would come back to Pennsylvania. Somebody said, "Hey, do you know a guy by the name of Wade Nolan?" And I said, "Yeah." "Well, he's going to be doing a whitetail seminar. I love hearing him speak. Why don't you come?" And I said, "Well, I can't." And he set us up to go meet for breakfast, and that's how you and I kind of got connected back up. But all of the guys,
I remember.
All the guys from my church couldn't wait to hear you speak, and they would drive 2 and 3 hours if they knew you were going to be speaking, because you got a lot of information. So when you have, you know, you're going out and you have a novice hunter, he could be an adult, he could be a kid, but he's really wanting to learn how to be effective, more successful. What's something you could pass on to these new hunters that would really, really help them be successful in the woods?
Boy, you know, there's a whole avalanche of information that's critical. But if I were to, kind of distill it down to one thing that most people blow, and that is they just don't pay enough attention to it, it's that a white-tailed deer, you know, if you think about how we operate with our eyes. I mean, we can taste things, we can see things, we can smell things, but really our eyes are our primary sense. With a white-tailed deer, I think if they were blind, they'd still be a hard adversary to take with a bow, because they see with their nose. they don't really see with their eyes. They rely 90% of what they their life out there is based on what they smell. And they know how to use the wind. And if you don't realize that you're hunting a 150, 200 pound nose walking around out there, a sophisticated nose, you'll lose every time.
You know, I was hunting a couple of days ago, and I had a couple of yearlings walk in front of me, and I had a wind blowing over top of their heads. It was in the evening, and the thermals were coming down, but the wind was strong enough. It was still over top of their heads and about 5 yards from my stand. But the maternal doe came in about 5 minutes later, and she was up on the hill a little bit higher. She was maybe only 20 yards away. Instantly, I mean, she knew. I mean, she got it, and that was it. My cover was blown. How well do these animals smell? I mean, can you put that into perspective for us?
Yeah, well, they're at an entirely different level than we can even imagine. Here's one thing that I early on I learned this about white-tailed deer, and I still talk about this in my seminars. And here's what it is, you know, a white-tailed deer can smell where you walked 24 hours later, and I've watched this over and over, and a lot of guys listening right now can remember, you know, getting into their tree stand and hours later have a whitetail approach and cross their entrance trail and then smell where they walked. And here's what people don't understand, Brent, and here's the big key. A whitetail deer is afraid of humans. We are their number one predator, and they're keyed in and have thousands of years of experience in avoiding humans because we hunt them. We are their key predator. And so they know what we smell like. They also know that if they cross our trail and the essence of human there, you know, the human scent is strong, they know that we may be in the vicinity and they go on alert. You can see that with their tails and, you know, just in their body actions, their behavior. But here's the deal. And a lot of companies out there market things, it's a bunch of smoke and mirrors, but let me tell you the truth. The truth is a white-tailed deer smells where you walked, not because there's some magic molecules floating around in the air right there or something. It's real basic. It's just smaller than you can normally see. They're skin cells. We exfoliate skin cells full time, billions of them every day. They're almost microscopic. Hold your arm up to a shaft of light coming through the window in your living room and rub your arm, and you'll see this little tiny snowstorm of these skin cells coming off of you. Well, you lose your entire epidermis every 28 days. And so there are billions of these, and they're like little sponges. They're little, they're called squamoidal cells. They're little sponges that are laced with human-specific bacteria whose job it is to eat your skin cells. I mean, God put them there for a reason. But that bacteria, when it respires, when as it eats your skin cells, it gives off an odor. That odor is human odor, and more specifically, Brent, it is you.
Have you found any kind of a product that really helps with this stuff? I know a lot of guys try to cover scent, you know, with an oak wafer or pine. Does that really work? And if not, what do you do personally?
Yeah, well, like I said, there's a lot of marketing out there, and we know for a fact, whitetail research tells us that a whitetail deer can smell clearly six different smells simultaneous and identify them. So, you know, if you do add some cover scent to your boots, you know, they can't smell boots, of course, they just smell your skin cells. But if you add some there, you know, well, what they'll smell will be that a coyote and a bow hunter was just here. You know,
yeah,
I mean, they
right.
can smell six things at once. They may also smell an apple tree that's 20 yards away. They may smell some mushrooms that are edible that are right there. You know, they can smell all these things and effectively do so. So, here's the strategy. Okay. Can you totally win the scent game? No. Is the carbon clothing the answer? That's a bunch of bunk. Get on the internet and Google that if you're wondering, and you'll find that there are lawsuits galore on that. It's the biggest hoax ever brought on the hunting industry. But here's the thing you can do, and here's what I do. You can start from the bottom and solve the problem from the source. And that is, I take a shower, I wear one of those, I put a couple of those little gloves on that are abrasive gloves. Your wife will help you with this if you can't find them. And so I just have a glove on each hand. I get in the shower. I take some, I use Atsco's hair and body soap, which is a scent-free, and it rinses free, doesn't leave any detergent residue on your body. I use that soap and I scrub down big time. And I mean, I get serious. I scrub every inch of my body with those abrasive gloves. And what I'm doing, Brent, is I'm removing those skin cells, those layers of skin cells that are there.
Right.
And because if you lose your entire epidermis every 28 days, every 1/28th of that, you know, there's a set of these skin cells that are exfoliating. You get scrubbing, man, you can take a week's worth off to where you're no longer exfoliating skin cells. You know, the ones that are there are like hooked on. They're not falling off and leaving a little snowstorm of human scent trail behind you. And so you just scrub down big time. And when you're all done, I rinse off real good. And then I take a product that is science-based. It's called, it's made by Atsco as well. It's called, it's an oxidizer. And it's a scent suppression spray.
Oh, this is the no-odor.
It actually kills. It's called no-odor, yeah.
Right, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and I've seen you use it, Brent. And so I do is while I'm still in the shower, I spray down with no-odor, which is an oxidizer, which uses science. And it actually neutralizes the bacteria, and it changes their respiration. You know, like say when they're respiring, they're giving off human odor. Well, that's organic, and it changes those organics into salts. And salts are inert, and they're not. Deer doesn't smell that on your body. So anyhow, I spray down with that, stand there for about a minute or two, and then towel off, put on clothes that have been washed in Sport Wash, which is the only engineered detergent out there. And I put on totally clean clothes, and I go hunting. And the fact is, you still want to spend most of your time staying downwind of these whitetails, but you can outsmart their nose if you go full tilt on this scent suppression idea. I even brush my teeth with the no odor oxidizer spray, and you can actually outsmart their nose.
Now let me ask you a question, because we've talked about, you know, their whole scent, their nose, or a walking nose. I know one time you told me the only thing a deer can't smell is what?
Nothing. They can smell everything else.
Yeah, never forgot that. But now for the experienced hunter, and we get a lot of these coming to these, you know, these seminars. I know you get a lot of them, and they're coming in saying, "Okay, I've been getting this scent game down. I take this pretty serious. I'm an experienced hunter. What is a piece of this puzzle that you see that they're missing?"
Brandon, again, it's some whitetail science, and it has to do with whitetail vision. We know there's solid science. We know that a whitetail deer sees two colors, yellow and blue. We know there's virtually nothing in the wild that's blue except the sky. And we also know that, so they see their entire world in shades of yellow, kind of like if you put shooting glasses on. But the only difference there is we know also that if you have UV brighteners in your clothes, in your camo, that you glow like a blue popsicle to the eyes of a white-tailed deer. And you can check your clothes by getting a black light and getting in a dark room and shining it on your camo. Everything you're wearing, top to bottom, even your pack, check it. Because if they're white, if, you know, a whitetail will see that radiating UV brighteners coming out of your clothing. And so you need to address that. And a lot of hunters, they wonder why whitetails look up. They look up because you're a blue popsicle. Here's some science. We know that a whitetail deer can see the wavelength that's around 440 nanometers, they can see that wavelength which radiates blue. They can see that blue better than we can see blaze orange.
Is there a certain time
so
of the day?
Imagine, Brent, if you were in a tree stand 15 or 20 feet up and I'm walking through the November woods and I'm going to walk past you, you think I'd see you if you were wearing top to bottom blaze orange?
Yeah, I'm
of
with
course.
You.
Well, you can fix that. There's a there's some a product called UV Killer that I use, and it's from that same company, that science-based company. It's called UV Killer, and you can get that. You can get it at a lot of places. You can get it online, but you can get it at a lot of sporting goods stores. I've seen it in Cabela's and whatnot.
Yeah, you called me on the phone last night. You called me on the phone last night, and you said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Do you remember what my response was?"
Yeah, you said you were treating some new camo with UV Killer.
Yeah, I had some camo. I actually had one set of camo that hadn't been treated yet, and I thought I could get away with it. And I had a doe look right at me. I mean, she got to the base of my tree, and her head popped straight up. I mean, she immediately was like, "This doesn't belong here." And the funny thing was, again, this was about within an hour of sunset. Is there something to that as far as the way that those wavelengths are read that time of the day?
Yeah, the UV brighteners show up better under low light conditions, and that's when whitetails are moving, and that's when their eyesight actually, which is largely rods, not cones. Rods are the black and white vision that's starting to shift over from cone vision, which is their color vision, which is the yellow and blue they see. It's starting to switch over, and what they can see at that time under those, you know, it's whitetail movement time. That's when they can see this UV the best. And so you got to be cognizant of that, and you got to get proactive and get out there and treat your clothes. You treat them one time, they're good forever, as long as you keep washing them in a detergent that doesn't have UV brighteners in. I use Sport Wash again. But the fact is, you know, whitetail sight and whitetail scent, get those things under control. I mean, you can probably shoot your bow pretty good at 20 yards, guys, but get those things under control and you'll be more effective.
We were at deer camp together a couple of years ago when Mike Jordan from Atsco, one of the guys who helps develop these products, was there, and you were doing a commercial for them and showing how it glows blue under low light conditions, and we treated all of our camo. Do you remember the story when I went out that night and I had to get out of my tree stand about 30 minutes before dark because I had to come, it was my turn to cook? And I got up and I walked up out of this valley up onto a top of a field, and I had my head to the ground. I wasn't even paying attention, walking back to my truck, and I look up 20 yards away. There are three does feeding, and they're looking at me, but their tails were down. They're just watching me, and I couldn't believe it. For about 2 minutes, I stood there, and they just kept looking at me and feeding. And I thought, well, I've got a doe tag, so I took an arrow out. But when I went to knock the arrow, I just touched the riser with the tip of my broadhead, made just a little pink sound, and that was all it took. That didn't belong in the woods. The deer were gone. But we got back to the house that night, the cabin, and I told Mike Jordan this, and he said, well, why are you so surprised? He said, if you're not glowing blue, he said, they're just not quite sure what you are. That was really amazing to me.
No, there's no doubt. It's solid science. All this research was done by some of the top whitetail people in the nation. Today, you'd recognize all their names. It was done at the Wornell School of Forestry down at the Whitetail Research Center, University of Georgia. I've been there. I've worked with the now director of that place, and I know all these guys. It's real stuff. And, you know, it's just one of those things that if you don't address it, it'll get you. And you won't know. You'll think you moved or something. But really, they can pick you off.
Now, you've been doing this a long time. You've seen all the new products come out. You've spent a lot of years in the woods. Is there anything you can think of, maybe in the last 10 or 15 years, you know, an innovative new product or something that you've really learned or discovered from working with these animals that has really made you more effective personally or changed the way you kind of do it all?
You know, Brent, even more than a product, I would say what I have learned over a lifetime of chasing these white-tailed deer is that nothing pays bigger dividends than time in the woods. If you can get out there and do serious scouting, not just a walk in the woods, but I mean focused scouting, you're looking at maps, you're looking at wind, prevailing wind directions, you know, you're looking at existing trails. I mean, use trail cams. Find out that, you know, 20 minutes before dark, deer are coming down this trail from the west. You know, you can learn all these things. Well, and the other thing, once you get, you know, we have research that shows that the more time you put in scouting, the more effective you are. These are the guys that are taking quality bucks every year. So if you can get out there and invest in that part of the hunt, it's not the part where you're drawing your bow. It's the part where you're kind of drawing conclusions. on where you want to be set up, what time you want to be there. You know, learn the habit, learn the 100 acres you hunt. Forget about this learning, you know, the whole county or 10 different places. Pick one good spot, learn it well, and you can be effective.
When
that's
I know
even
you've,
more important than any, you know, new product out there.
You know, I know there are people that contact you on the phone because of, you know, food plots and different things, and you being a biologist, understanding nutrition for these deer, you've had a chance to really study, you know, their patterns, what they're eating. And that was something else I just wanted to ask you quickly before we kind of move on to the last question was, you know, with these food sources, keeping quality deer in your area, I mean, what would you personally recommend, or what do you help other guys with?
You know, there's one thing you can do if you have access to the land you're actually hunting, if it's yours or you have permission to modify it in any way. If you can set it up so that you'd have some perennial food plots, that would be, you know, some clovers or chicories or something that's going to be there year-round. That's a big plus, putting in some perennial food plots. But the other thing is annual food plots are also real beneficial. You don't need a giant area. If you only had a half acre, you can make this work. But I use I plant this stuff called frigid forage. It's actually made for up north, and it just thrives up here. But I use something called, it's a brassica mix, Big and Beastie Brassica. And it has a blend of, I don't know, 8 or 10 different things in it. But the fact is, it's a lot of these annual brassicas. And, you know, they're from the turnip and broccoli family. Deer love them, and they're also the easiest thing to plant food plot wise. They're going to make you look like a pro every time. But you know, you plant them in August, early September, and they are just peaking right when you want to hunt. But you know, those are a couple things that I like to do, and it takes a lot of work to get food plots to really work for you, but you can get them to work.
There's going to be a lot of guys listening to this, and I have a question. If these guys wanted to be able to reach you, I mean, how would they find your information? How would they get a hold of you?
You know, the best way is you can kind of follow me on bowhunting.net and archerytalk.com because I run the streaming video on the top of both of those two sites. Those are the two biggest sites in the hunting industry, and they're both bow hunting. You know, the other thing is I've got a website where I do a lot of my bookings for my speaking events, my wild game dinners, and that's simply my name, wadenolan.com.
So let me ask you another question as we wrap up this thing now. I know you very well. We've spent way too many nights together on boats stranded out in the ocean and in tents and between lion prides. You've taken me to some really crazy stuff. But let me ask you a question, and I know that some of the other guys I had talked to, this was a real passion of theirs as well. Why do you do what you do? What is it that drives you?
Brent, I've had so many people who don't even know me just start looking at my webpage, read my bio, and they say, wow, you've lived like this incredible, adventuresome life, you know, like 100 guys put together wouldn't have the, you know, the sum total of crazy background things, you know, that I see in your bio. And, but here's what I say, you know what, here's the best thing about that. I really credit God with setting me up with who I am. I mean, I've been a Christ follower since I was 28 years old. And the fact is, God has just opened up so many doors in my life and really influenced me. And so what I like to do, where my passion is, yeah, I like grizzly bears and lions and white-tailed deer, and I, you know, it's kind of my vocation. But my passion, I really enjoy sharing Christ with unchurched men. And the fact is, I can use my background. I can use my background to draw men in to events where there's 300 or 500 or 1,000 men sitting there. And what I enjoy doing is using my, you know, true life and death stories. And I tell my story. And I'm a Christ promoter because he's had such a tremendous influence in my life. I just like to promote Jesus Christ to those guys, those outdoorsmen who are out there sharing the same passion as me on the outdoor front. I like to share my passion with Christ with them.
You know, you and I both have a real passion for Christ and for the outdoors, and it's just kind of neat. God crossed our paths back in the early 80s, again, starting maybe about 7-8 years ago, and something for the guys out there that are kind of maybe wondering a little bit more about what we're talking about with this whole Christ follower thing is you and I have a DVD series getting ready to come out in just a few months called Dangerous for Good, where we go around the world and just film some crazy stuff and bringing this all back down for guys to be able to, you know, that maybe don't really would never darken the door of a church, but really do believe in God, just don't know how to find good teaching or something that relates to them. And I've been really blessed and honored and excited about working with you and doing this stuff. And I hope we have many, many more years of being able to travel, you know, not only just hunting whitetails, but seeing the world and being able to pass this information on, whether it be, you know, adventure hunting or just discipling guys in their walk with God. And buddy, it is an honor for me to be able to call you friend. I'm glad you could be here today doing this. And I know I'll be with you in about 4 days. Our deer camp is coming up. We'll be in southeastern Ohio together. And keep hunting for truth. And I'll see you in the woods in just a few days.
Sounds great, Brent. Thanks for the opportunity.